Dabba Dabby do. You don't get... Look, you get it.
Justin, you need to leave it now.
Justin, I was trying to sing these songs.
You, you were singing it for about 12 minutes. La, 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 la. It's a brilliant song, Bobby.
Baby.
I love it, Bobby. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. By the way, you are listening to Whims, Walk In My Shoes FM. Unfortunately, we're going to have to say goodbye shortly. I want to thank Alison for being a brilliant co-host today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dustin.
You're much better than Laura.
Delighted.
Only messing Laura. If you, she won't cook dinner now tonight. She'll have me in the separate room. In me old nest if I don't say that.
So we got Brent Pope coming up next after.
G'day.
Very exciting.
I pretend I'm from New Zealand, but I'm really from Australia.
And then Nuala Kerry is on.
And don't forget our beautiful Sinead, who's produced us today, is with Brent Pope
Sinead's
today
been
for
brilliant.
Her troubles.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sinead.
Delighted. I'm delighted. And Fair City stars Eric Lawler and David O'Sullivan.
How do they use the word Fair City and star in the same sentence? Unless the star has gone out.
Like, but it's 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. and then we got Pat O'Mahony.
Who is the only person, by the way, who's getting paid for this. We are all volunteers. Pat is taking away. Just if you want to text him later. You want to say hello to someone else, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I want to say hello to Fergal and my uncle John Paul, who are listening. He said I did a very good job at singing there. So thanks very much,
brilliant.
John Paul.
And to our listeners in Japan who texted, he tweeted us in very nice. Thanks a million.
Yeah,
you're listening all around
excited.
The world. You forget sometimes we're online as well. And we are online at www.walkinmyshoes.ie.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dustin, for having me. Now, we're still here with Bobby Ahern from No Monster Club. And Bobby, we're here with a Eurovision legend, Dustin.
Well, is Johnny Logan here? Or is it your man, Linda Martin? Who?
Well, Bobby, you...
Why me?
I can't believe Dustin didn't win. I'm still sore about it.
It was disgraceful.
It's a disgrace. I want to.
Well, they started inventing the countries, Bobby. That was the problem. When Johnny Logan won the Eurovision, there were three countries in it. There was Luxembourg, Connacht, and Norway, or UK. And now they're making up countries like Azerbaijan. They think as if there's a country called Azerbaijan or Estonia. Like as if I'm going to fall for that.
It's an absolute.
But you want to do? Bobby wants to do the Eurovision,
yeah,
isn't it?
I definitely want to do the Eurovision. The closing date is in 3 weeks, so I might do a song if you want to put in a good word for me with the turkeys at RTE. You know,
I will. Yeah, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them, but I can put in a lot of words.
So
we'll see.
Do you want to play us out with a song?
Yeah, and where can people catch you, Bobby? If you're saying you're in a hiatus at the moment, I'm in a hiatus.
We'll be playing soon. I've been doing an EP every month this year, so I've been quite busy doing that. Go on Twitter at No Monster Club or Facebook. Just look for No Monster Club or NoMonsterClub.com.
Brilliant.
And then we'll do a song that we all know. And I think this is speaking of Eurovision. This goes way back. I remember 62. I was 16 and so were you. And we lived next door on the avenue.
Turn your radios up.
Johnny Lee was big and Elvis too. Blue jeans and blue suede shoes. And we never knew what life held in store. We just wanted to rock and roll forevermore. And listening to those songs on the radio.
Whims FM.
I was yours and you were mine.
But hey,
that was once upon a time. Now we never seem to rock and roll anymore.
Well, you better believe it. Take it home, Alison.
Johnny's in love with the girl next door.
Who?
Mary's down at the record store. They don't wanna be around us no more. Golden oldies, but we hardly speak. Too busy running to a different beat. Hard to understand. We were once like them. Oh, how I wish we could find those rock and roll days again. Everybody.
Here we go.
We were the rock and roll kids. Rock and roll is all we did. And listening to those songs on the radio.
No Coldplay.
I was yours and you were mine.
But hey,
that was once upon a time. Now we never seem to rock and roll anymore.
Yes, and remember, it's okay not to feel okay, and it's certainly okay to talk about it. We've had a blast here in Whims FM. please, if you are suffering, please do get help. St. Patrick's University Hospital here. All the guests, brilliant week coming Thursday and Friday tomorrow. We do have Pat O'Mahony, be warned, but it's going to be brilliant. Take it away again. Bring it up, Bobby. Here we go.
Everybody, we were the rock and roll kids. The rock and rolls is all we did. And listening to those songs on the radio.
Then what happened?
Well, I was yours and you were mine.
Leave it to me. But that was once upon a time.
Now we never seem to rock and roll. No, we never seem to rock and roll. We just never seem to rock and roll anymore.
Won't you stay, at least until the sun goes down. When you're gone, I lose faith, I lose everything I have found. Heartstrings, violence, that's what I hear when you're by my side. Yeah, that's what I hear when you're by my side.
Mental Health Week. This is Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
don't like it. I love it, love it, love it. Uh-oh. So good it hurts. I don't want it. I gotta have it. Uh-oh. When I can't find the words, I just go.
My Shoes Radio. I'm counselling psychologist Sinead Lynch, and I'm super excited to be presenting with the lovely Brent Pope.
Oh, thank you very much, Sinead. I call her Sinead, so I've known her for a long time, so I'm delighted to be here and talk about mental health and have a bit of crack.
Absolutely, and I know we have a tough act to follow with Dustin and Alison, but we'll do our best.
Oh, not really. You will overrate them. they're no competition ball. It's not a silly turkey and somebody else. No.
Well, listen, first up today, we're going to talk to Michael Doherty from the RT Guide. You've been with us the last few days, Michael, talking about good mood, movies, and what we can look out for in the cinema. And then today, we're going to talk about the worst Irish accents that's ever been out there.
What not to look out for in the cinema.
Exactly. Well, this is a funny sort of thing
to discuss. Yeah. It's quite light. There'll be some serious stuff later on.
Absolutely.
But we're following Dustin and Alison, so we'll start off.
And does it annoy you? Like, as Irish people, when you go to a movie and you see a bad accent, does it actually annoy you?
It does, particularly when you know there are good Irish actors out there and you know that they've only chosen this guy because he is box office. And you just go, oh, my God.
No.
And when the worst thing is, because the problem is, as we'll see with the very first clip, which is Darby O'Gill and the Little People from 1961, that was the movie that almost set in train the definition of an Irish accent for American audiences, and that's been a problem. When people are thinking, what's an Irish accent? They're not thinking about real Irish people. They're going, what was that movie I saw? Oh, yes. Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Oh no, so we can blame it on them.
So we can pretty much blame it on that. And do we have a clip, or are people prepared to actually put their fingers in their ears? Okay, let's have a clip. Darby O'Gill, 1961.
When your phone was ready, but you were making so much noise you couldn't hear me.
Faith, I know I can't sing a lick, but when I'm roaring like Doran's bull, it works up a killing hunger in me. And what have we got here?
Bread newly baked, butter fresh from the churn, and boiled eggs and ham.
Well now, aren't you the clever girl? You've enough here to feed the parish.
I thought you'd be hungry. I hope the bread is cold.
Oh, I like it hot.
Oh, so full of cliches too, isn't it?
And it's so fast, like it's like we're on fast forward.
That's
well,
it. And I wonder, do people recognise the young Irish book of an actor who was there?
No,
that was a fella called Sean O'Connery.
Sean O'Connery.
Yeah.
That was one of his first ever roles. He was playing Michael McBride, and a movie which was tagged as, and we should have known by this, more than a wee bit of musical shenanigans.
Oh my goodness!
So, I mean, it's actually, in fairness, I mean, it's a Walt Disney movie. It's a bit of crack.
Sure.
But unfortunately, it became the yardstick against which, for generations, American audiences were measuring the quality of an Irish accent.
But see, I find even coming over here when I came out, like, few people realise around the world just how many dialects and how many accents you have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you go to the States, and even though most of them claim to be Irish, they think it's one accent.
Yeah.
Whereas you come over here and people can just about tell what side of the street they're from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
And I can tell it now. Like, yeah. I can tell I'm talking to someone from Kerry or Cork or Limerick or whatever. I can tell it. But
I wonder, is it the same?
Know.
Has it been the same in New Zealand?
No.
Are people making terrible accents? No. Yeah.
No, there's a bit of a difference with the Polynesian to the Maori, and it's, you know, hey, bro, sweet ass, bro. Yeah. You know, they have their own language, but generally one dialect, one accent. Yeah. Over here, like, you know.
Yeah. And why did they pick someone like Sean? Was it because he was popular, or did they feel, oh, he's close enough to Ireland?
Yeah, it is that he's close enough. Like, we'll be playing, I think, which is hilarious. I mean, Sean Connery is famous now for not changing his accent. I mean, he played a Russian commander with his own Edinburgh accent. But like for something like The Untouchables, which, I don't know, maybe we might play that one next.
Yes.
This is like Sean Connery post-Bond. He's a huge star. But yet, he's big enough now when they say he's playing a cop, an Irish cop called Malone, opposite Kevin Costner, and he was told, listen, you know, plan an Irish accent to play the cop. He goes, nah, I'm just going to use my own accent. And he used, as you'll hear in the clip, this isn't an Irish accent, but he won an Oscar, his only Oscar for this role.
Wow.
You said you wanted to know how to get Capone. Do you really want to get him? You see what I'm saying? What are you prepared to do?
Everything within the law.
And then what are you prepared to do? If you open the ball on these people, Mr. Nash, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
I want to get Capone. I don't know how to get him.
Want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone.
So did they think that that was an Irish accent?
Oh, people were very happy with that. Yeah. Because especially in the States, like it's sort of Celtic, and it's a bit of a twang, and he's playing a guy called Malone, and so, that's fine.
No. You know?
Wow. Okay.
So it's only on this side of the Atlantic we were going, sorry, say that again?
Yeah.
I should have met, I wonder how, because I don't have, you know, people say to me, I've been over here, 25 years, and I don't have any part of an Irish accent apart from saying, like, you know, your man and your woman, or you know, gas man, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, I wonder how hard it is for the opposite way. I wonder how hard it is for people to learn an Irish accent.
No, it's not. I mean, we've seen just some great examples of people who have just absolutely
got it now.
You'd actually think they were. I've interviewed them and said, you must have no Irish blood. It's in the same way that we see Irish actors learning tremendous, you know,
American.
South America, the deep South, or New York, or Californian. It doesn't take that much, but I think they fall back on Darby O'Gill.
Yes, and this next one, we don't have a clip, unfortunately, but this is one of your...
No, we don't have a clip because it's just too much to insult the Irish ears. But this is a movie that I know Brent shares my distaste with. Now, in fairness, it's called Leap Year, and people remember, it's. I mean, not only is it an egregious accent, it's Matthew Good, Amy Adams, he comes to Ireland to propose. Not only is the accent horrible, and in fairness, I interviewed Matthew Good afterwards, and he apologised to the nation of Ireland.
Wow.
So hats off for that. But it's not even the accent. It's not just the accent. I mean, they go to Wales, and they take a boat to Ireland, and they end up in Cork. It takes 3 days to drive from Dingle to Dublin, and all the roads are, you know, country lanes.
Country lanes.
Every Irish guy is...
Cottages.
Every Irish guy you meet is I'll fight you, and I'm drinking, you know.
Yeah, know.
But so this was absolutely one of the worst.
Well, but before we talk about the next one, with Leap Year, you know the way in, is it in Kerry where there's the matchmaking and things like that?
Yeah.
Did they have this idea that actually in Ireland there's all this kind of romance and...
Oh, very much. I mean,
and this happens, yeah, and the Irish people will... Well, tell us your stories, Brent. But, you know, did they just, again, like the first one that we talked about, Darby O'Gill?
Yeah.
It was billed as
almost like a true story. They said, the reason we're coming to Ireland is that there is a tradition in Ireland which is held every... that the woman can propose or the man can propose on the 29th.
Yeah.
This is the whole point, mm-hmm. and it happens all the time. Maybe that happens sometimes, but what doesn't happen... is that, as Matthew Good showed, I've never heard anybody say, riddle me this. And throughout the whole movie, he just says, riddle me this. And at that stage, the second time he said it, I was sort of throwing my boot at the screen.
Yes.
But he says it throughout the whole movie, and there's a love affair,
I would suggest. There's a love affair with American directors that they want to keep Ireland stuck back in the old days, where there was traditions and there was this dancing and revelry and drink and jokes and tweed hats.
It is, yeah.
That's the way that they see it. And they still see it now as tourists, by the way.
No, it's true, but also because a lot of these guys now, the current directors, a lot of them are third generation Ireland.
Yeah.
So they grew up with JFK and the Heart of the Hob and all this and the songs.
Guinness.
So they love all that. So I don't think it's bad. It's not out of badness.
Right.
It is out of nostalgia, but it's still bad. It's not easy.
I'll fight you for everything.
I'll fight you. It doesn't make it any easier for us to listen to it on this side, you know.
Well, before we listen to the really bad ones, let's take some romance with Bruno Mars.
There's not a thing that I would change, 'cause
Good afternoon, everybody. That was Bruno Mars. And given the week that's in it, I'm sure you're all amazing just the way you are.
Oh, yes. Listen to those tones.
Now, what we're talking about is bad tones, and we're talking ridiculously bad Irish accents in the movies.
We have three more to go, Brent, and one of them is P.S. I love you.
Well, thank you very much.
I can hear, and of course we do.
I can hear. I love you.
I can hear the cringe in the background. Actually, this is a different story. Where love stories begin. Walk in My Shoes Radio. This is Celia Hearn's novel. People remember it. People remember it actually less for the novel than for Gerard Butler's accents. And again, and I'm pleased to say on his behalf, he also apologised to the Irish nation as a whole.
Well, he was awful
afterwards.
It was
pretty bad. He was opposite double Oscar-winning Hilary Swank and also a little canine. But I think Gerard Butler's accent, as we hear in this clip, is probably the reason why we're cringing at the moment.
Wait!
What?
Yeah, it's a wild Irish dog.
A what?
Stand still.
Okay.
Close. Like one person. And if we separate, he'll feel threatened and attack our vital parts.
What? Vital parts? All my parts are vital.
We have to stand still. Now just let him sniff around a bit.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we all strayed away with that. It's just like, what?
I mean, Hilary made a bit of an effort. I think even the dog had a better Irish accent than Gerard Butler. And he's Scottish. So, like, he's supposed to be like a Celtic soul brotherhood.
I'm not actually a fan of any of his movies, really.
No, not a huge fan.
No.
Actually, I love 300, but I think apart from that...
Well, that was an animated type.
That was more the effects than him, yeah. But certainly he didn't endear himself to the Irish nation. But he apologised, and so we accept it.
So, P.S., we don't love you.
P.S., you can't do the accent, Gerard. That's the sequel.
Absolutely.
Not that he really cares what we think, to be honest. Listen, Hollywood superstar.
The money wasn't dollars. It wasn't in puns.
He
didn't
like me on the radio in Ireland. Oh, well. Yeah.
That's it.
So what's next, Michael?
Number two is, I mean, this is actually a franchise I love, Back to the Future. Everyone loves Back to the Future, and Back to the Future 2 was a fairly decent sequel. But unfortunately, in Back to the Future 3, they ended up in the Wild West, and for some reason it was the Irish family in the Wild West, and Marty's ancestor was, and this is the sad thing for us, and I'm getting ready to put my fingers on my ears. Seamus McFly. Here we go.
Maggie! Fetch some water. We got a hard man here.
Maggie. I've got supper. I'm not one to pry into a man's personal affairs, but exactly how is it that you came to be way out here without a horse or boots or a hat?
Where's your hat, Michael?
Where's your hat? I'll find you.
And your boots.
Yeah, your boots.
Well, it sounded like a sort of a bad version, because Brad Pitt's in Snatch was brilliant, of course, but that sounds like a sort of a bad version of
it's
that.
It's not a bad version, that says a lot. Oh, yeah, I mean, Brad Pitt is Laurence Olivier compared to that. But obviously, it hasn't tainted the franchise just a tad. But I can't watch part three. I'll just stick to watching the first one.
It'd be interesting if we could find Irish people who actually do speak like this.
I wonder. I think they all live in middle America somewhere and watching Darby O'Gill movies on a loop.
Yes.
But I don't think you'll find anyone in Ireland who sounds like that.
So your number one worst movie accent.
Yeah, it has to be. It's no surprise. And I was talking to Brent outside, and when I even mentioned the name of this movie, he cringed. I'm sure people have already guessed. Ron Howard. Tom O. Cruise and Nicole Kidman and Far and Away. Oh, you're a carpet
Joseph!
Shaman.
Joseph!
Excuse me, drunkards. Hello, Grace.
Hello, Joseph. Will I be seeing you in church tomorrow morning?
Sounds divine and holy, Grace. We can share a pew, me and you.
Toodaloo.
Same to you.
She's got an awfully large chest to be going to church.
Oh, Shannon, all chests are equal in the eyes of the Lord.
She goes into the confession box. She'll never come out, the little tramp.
Excuse Nicole's tramp word there. But anyway, I mean, the thing about that one, again, is that, it's it's taking it to a different level, isn't it? It's just, did anyone come and do the research?
Yeah, exactly. It's not as if, I mean, Ron, a lot of those guys have Irish roots and they've met and they've often been in Ireland. Ron Howard's been in Ireland a lot, as has Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. So you almost feel like, could even as an actor, if you were told by the director, you need to say, oh-de-doo, toodle-doo, would you not go, listen, I'll just say it in my own, the Irish accent that I know and that I hear. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's very
odd.
But again,
it was going back to what I said before. It was like this, Tom Cruise, I think, was fighting in every second scene with that sort of fist up, back, you know, I'll fight you for everything.
I'll fight you, exactly. Kind of, you know,
even what we were saying before, you're a corker. Like, who talks like that?
Yeah,
I think probably what they did is the director probably said that was possibly phrases they used back then, and let's put them into modern accent, and they just don't work.
No, it never works. Either you go to full hog and trying to go back, or try to be modern, but not good.
Michael, I'm going to have to say toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
And toodaloo to you, and top of the morning to you both.
Thanks so much, Michael, for coming in. We'll see you again tomorrow. You're going to talk about Wonder Woman, the power of Wonder Woman.
And women in Hollywood.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Well, from really bad accents to a nice song, maybe, we have, who is it, Moves Like Jagger.
Support, we can all enjoy life. Taking that first step is possible with St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. If you have concerns about your mental health, talk to your GP or call our support line on 01-249-3333. Don't wait to enjoy life again. St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. Empowering recovery.
The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came.
Spell on me, you hit me like the sky fell on me, fell on me. And I decided you look well on me, well on me. So let's go somewhere no one else can see you and me. Turn the lights out now, now I'll take you by the hand. Hand you another drink, drink it if you can. Can you spend a little time? Time is slipping away, away from us, so stay. Stay with me, I can make you glad you came. The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came. Glad you came. The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came. Come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came.
And that was The Wanted with I'm Glad You Came. And I'm Sinead Lynch, and I'm presenting with my co-host, who I'm glad he's here, Mr. Brent Pope.
Thank you very much.
Now, a life fulfilled with happiness is something we all strive for, but sometimes for many people struggling with mental health problems such as anxiety and depression, a future full of potential may seem unachievable. Professor Jim Lucy focuses on this and many other things in his book, The Life Well Lived. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sinead. Thank you for having me.
Always a delight to talk to you, of course.
You're very sweet. It's great you're here. And the whole Women's Radio is just fantastic.
It's brilliant. And, you know, it's so great to have people like Brent here, not only sharing his time, but also sharing your story, Brent, because I think that's what people want to hear, that actually we're talking more about these things.
And I'm delighted, I'm fascinated to look at even the cover of the book there, Jim, The Life Well Lived, because I think you really struck a chord with me. I am somebody that suffered from anxiety in my life, and it's taken the enjoyment out of my life. And I'm great to see people writing that there's hope. And I mean, I go around the country speaking about young people wanting to change then and change the out, and that's what it seems to be that the book is about, that, you know, we all deserve to have that life and not to be robbed by anxiety or depression or other mental health issues, that there is a way through. There are a number of therapies that you'll talk about, that there's a way to get back on track and have that life.
And the expectation for that life is a perfectly reasonable one we should have. In 21st century Ireland, it should be possible to see mental health difficulties as an experience, but not an identity. Absolutely. It's certainly not a sentence. It's something that can happen to you, and we can recover, and we need early intervention. We need effective evidence-based therapy. And the therapies that we picked out, these are ones that actually we have here in St. Patrick's, but it's about the experience of their effectiveness that brought me to them. I mean, I felt this was something that we should really talk about.
Sure, like really tell people.
Tell people. Mm. You know, people say, well, what can you do now? There's nothing new in mental health. That's not true.
No.
Turns out that compassion-focused therapy is really powerful, and there's an evidence base, and really good people have developed it. So then the question is, how do we get it into the debate? And how do we get people to say, coming forward and saying, why can't I get craft therapy? Why can't I get acceptance and commitment therapy? I hear it's really good. Well, actually, they didn't know about it. They didn't know it was there.
Yes, a bit of psychoeducation around treatment.
Yes, and I think creating some, I would like some debate about the access to therapies and people to be able to say, well, you know, I want to engage in this. Where is it? Where can I get it?
But there's not enough information. Like,
they don't know from the first place.
Exactly. And I want to lose the word, and I talk a lot about losing the word stigma. I think that is old hat around mental health. I think, you know, it takes us back years ago. It's really now about more information for people out there. So that you talk about early intervention, which is crucial. But people need to have more information so they're more confident for early intervention. So they say, okay, there's something wrong with me. I'm over-anxious about this, or I've been suffering this for 6 months. I need to go and see someone. What's the right therapy for me? Who should I see? They're too scared to do that. They tiptoe around that. They'll change their bodies, but they won't change their minds.
Well, people are scared. And you know, I really feel for their fear. I'm scared. You know, none of us is really that different. We're all human, and I've got loads of fears. So I feel really an empathy with the anxiety. But what I'm saying is what you're saying. If you haven't the language about an issue, if you don't know about it, you know, like we've removed the asylums, we've removed, and I think you're right about stigma. The walls are now virtual walls. But actually, we also removed the debate around the content of care, about action, about turning the interventions and the awareness. I'll admit, awareness is much better now, but it's not translated into action.
No,
absolutely. You want to get to that next step of, so someone talks about their anxiety and they open up, but who listens?
I mean, there's loads of hope around this. We've talked a lot about the dangers of the internet and the web and all the rest.
Yeah.
But I when I do talks, I say, well, why don't people go on the web and look at, you know, Mary Cannon's study, which you can look at, about the mental health of our children. It's really good Irish data, internationally valid data. It's not surprising that she's listed as the top 100 scientists in the world, and the data's here. Wow. And you can look at it. And, and in fact, it pops up like stick men. It's really easy to read, but this is super science.
Sure.
Or the Growing Up in Ireland study.
But I think certain people, and I speak to a lot of younger people, I don't know if Sinead works in the trade as well, in the business, but I don't know whether people just think that it's part of me and it's not fixable, or I'm not actually, or it's going to go away of its own accord. That's the kind of attitude I get. I said to people, like, okay, you know that there's something maybe wrong with you, that you're suffering something, anxiety or depression, whatever that, but, you know, did you ever think about doing something about it?
Sure.
And the answer is, oh, well, not really.
Like I said, I didn't know, maybe.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I sympathize with that, but I also think that, you know, in the position we have, you know, recovered, empowered, I dare I say privileged. It's our duty to make therapy easy to access, and actually to be talented enough to make it attractive. And to show the evidence base, not to peddle falsehoods.
I couldn't agree more.
You know, I mean, it's no use saying to people, absolutely, yes, it's true to say recovery takes effort. There's a work in recovering from OCD. It's mental work.
But make it easy to
accept. But make it accessible. For a long time, I think going to your psychiatrist or your psychologist was as unpleasant as getting root canal. Okay? You know? And even now, we put them in grim places and say that's in the city centre. No. Actually, this should be really high street accessible, attractive, available, affordable, and likeable. And people should come back and say, you know, I feel better.
Because we're applying those terms to wellness and mindfulness, aren't we? You know, they're having retreats and camps and things like
absolutely.
That.
It's,
so,
absolutely.
You know, we just need to take
and
that.
And it is possible if we talk about the content of care now, because if it is effective, then the pleasure principle will work. People will come back for something that actually works. But we have told people, you know, you've got to suck it up and there is no hope for an awful long time.
That's all I ever heard.
Well, the trouble is, your shoulders are broad enough, and by the way, this is what it's... And that was true for us in the profession. I can remember starting out in mental health and people saying, you don't want to do that. You know, so this...
Trying to break it.
The stigma is self-stigma as well. So when you start saying, you know, I'm working in a fantastic place, this is really a great place to do mental health, people think, oh, that can't be.
Sure. But you mentioned different therapies in your book, The Life Well Lived, and I was wondering, how do you find sometimes describing things like, say, compassion therapy? Do you find that people are looking at you blankly, or, you know, you said they're about trying to make it attractive or understandable?
Well, I mean, Paul Gilbert's work is out there, and he's...
What is compassion, for those out there?
Compassion-focused therapy is really looking at those people who are most reproachful of themselves and seeing that as the big problem. Shame and guilt as being a difficulty. And in fact, rather than identifying, you know, the biological features...
Love yourself a bit more.
Discovering that actually the trouble is that I am actually beating myself up. Now, you might say it's an obvious thing, but you can expand that.
I need some of that. Words guilt and shame.
Sure.
I use the word guilt and shame myself, and I beat myself up about, you know, that's my worst problem.
The content of compassion-focused therapy is so uplifting. And it means that, you know, you start saying, well, hold a minute, you know what? We're going to lower the bar. Mm. We're going to make the target much, much less, and we're going to achieve so much more because we're going to say, you're actually able and you're great. Mm. And all of a sudden, the dialogue isn't about blame, and it isn't about shame, and it isn't about anger. And certainly not anger directed against ourselves.
Yes.
The whole idea of compassion becomes the central focus of the therapy. I'm going to learn to forgive myself or even to celebrate myself.
Absolutely.
Now, that's really, really challenging for somebody who's never done that.
Absolutely. And you said there about Paul Gilbert's book, The Compassionate Mind, I think as well about compassion. People say, oh, right, so is it loving myself? And then the next question often is, how do I do that?
And
sometimes it might just be, well, try not to be as critical to yourself.
Well, I mean, it all goes back to kindness. Yes. But what people didn't understand until, I suppose, the CBT revolution is that you can learn mindsets. You can actually learn a culture. You can enculturate yourself. And supposing compassion and kindness were never part of that, supposing reproach and failure and actually critique and neglect, those were the things that you mapped out your mental mind, your word map.
Exactly. No, because it becomes...
Oh, no, I'm scared narrative. Listening because you're talking about me. Absolutely, in those things you hear, because I, you know, when people would say love yourself a bit more, I took that as being an egotistical thing. You know, do people want you to? Oh God, love, but I find it very hard to forgive mistakes I've made. I find it very hard to forgive me, even though people say, look, you're only human or whatever. We make mistakes. I don't see it that way. Severe guilt, severe shame around not being able to fix my mind. My body always served me well. My mind didn't, and I felt that that was tough for me. And so I do need to love myself and think that I'm okay, I find that very difficult.
And there's plenty of voices. I mean, the trouble is, in terms of the science of this, that our minds attend to the negative much more because we're built that way. It's a self-protective mechanism. And in Gilbert's analysis, he says, you know, striving and actually avoiding danger, they become the big things that drive us. But actually, joy and fulfillment mechanisms, they're hugely organized in our bodies and our brains, but they're not actually sustained because they're not looked to.
They're
They're practiced because they're not the first thing you have to do. The species has to protect itself.
Survive first.
It has to run and hide, and it also has to sort of discipline.
Yes.
But then this third area, which is that whole cortical awareness that isn't built if the language isn't there. But actually, here's the thing, you can learn that. And suddenly you're the person in a crisis who says, you know what? This is going to be all right.
And I think...
I mean, that's an amazing power, isn't it?
It is. It's so empowering because I think when you have learned it, it's life-changing to feel.
Yeah,
it's amazing empowering even to hear from you, even to hear somebody say that.
Yeah.
That it'll be okay or you'll be okay or...
This is going to be all right. And I love the famous poem from McMahon, everything is going to be all right.
All will be well, as my mother used to say.
Absolutely. Just and if you can say that.
Hurry up, will you?
That's all right.
That's well, I know it will be well, but just when? What time? Three o'clock, that's right.
Exactly. And then you get the striving and the pushing and the anger, and then you say, well, hold a minute.
Yeah, hold on. I'll be well next week.
Well, you say that the compassion takes time, but actually, here's the thing. Actually, experiencing the journey towards compassion now becomes a life that's worth living. Rather than solving this problem, no, I want to live between now and this solution.
That's me.
That's lovely. You take home his book now, Brent, and The Life Well Lived.
That's it.
Well, enjoy it.
Wait till next week. I tell you what, you'll hear these screams of joy from my house.
Well, everybody, Brent, in the book is real.
Yeah, well, I love that. I love the fact
Arthur's story is, I think, a really good story about compassion.
Yeah.
And he's a lot better for having discovered.
Well, I love the fact you've written it with patients and with real people, because I think sometimes these books can be over technical for most people. This is a book, obviously, that anybody can pick up and get something out of. So well done.
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Sinead.
Thank you so much, Professor Jim Lucy, The Life Well Lived, in all good bookstores, as they say. Thank you for coming on. Now we have a bit of Ollie Moore's Unpredictable.
I'm sick, I like it. There's a moment when we fight, it gets so exciting. The next move is someone's. Or maybe that's what makes it fun, we don't know what's coming.
But you got me and I got you. Can't stop this ship, we wanted to.
Yes, I'm starting to think a lot of these titles of these songs were deliberately chosen. That was Unpredictable by Ollie Moores.
Chosen for you, Brent Pope.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see what the next titles of songs are going to be.
Don't look into your future, Yvette. Welcome to Walk in My Shoes Radio, raising awareness for World Mental Health Week. You can listen to us online at walkinmyshoes.ie or, of course, nationwide. Now,
all this week we've been talking about positive things. And now we're going to talk about some good mood food with Eleanor Sutton, who's a dietitian here in St. Patrick's Mental Health Hospital. Yeah, good mood food. Brilliant. Eat a croissant and have the coffee at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
For breakfast.
Welcome.
I won't tell you what I eat.
So tell us about kind of foods or this whole kind of science behind the fact that we're learning foods can actually affect our mental health.
Affect our mood. I suppose it's always been established, or a lot of the older evidence would be in line with sort of foods can affect your heart and your long-term risk of heart disease. Sugar might affect your increased risk of diabetes, obesity, liver disease, renals. There's quite strong links with diet with them. But I suppose in the last couple of years, mental health and diet, there's been more research put into it and more findings. Right. And if you do a literature review on the last couple of years, there's been about 50 studies done on different kind of aspects of mental health and diet.
Okay, and you've got about 5 things that you're going to sort of discuss with us today. So what's the first one that you're saying is good for our good mood?
So I picked out a couple of things that tend to come up in my job here working as a dietitian. And the first thing I picked was folate, because studies have linked folate with low levels in the blood with increased risk of depression in older adults. And it's something that we tend to find when we do bloods in St. Patrick's, that people's levels of folate are low. And it's just to, I know people are probably aware of it with having children and pregnancy and the importance of folic acid, but links with it and mental health are growing. So it's just sort of to include folate in your diet, in cereals, in spinach, in broccoli, and a lot of foods now like flour are fortified with folate.
I'm sorry, how do you include it?
How do you include it?
Yeah. Like what foods are you talking about,
like
here?
Broccoli,
you're saying broccoli and
spinach,
things.
Oh, okay. Like in stir fries, and eating it raw is quite good because.
And I see there, if you boil them too much or cook it too much, it takes the goodness out of it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you should be like stir fries with the broccoli, and they're just about raw.
Yeah, or cook it in a minimal amount of water.
Yeah.
Okay. For the minimal amount of time.
Yeah.
Okay, and so as you said, studies are proving that more folic acid or more folate in our diet helps with reducing depression?
Or reduce depression, yeah.
Okay.
It's not conclusive evidence, but it's kind of a finding and they need more studies, but it is
linked.
Yeah.
And the next one you have for us?
The next one I picked was
magnesium.
Magnesium, and it's just sort of to highlight that magnesium and zinc and B vitamins, thiamine, all these vitamin and minerals are quite important in your diet, and they've been shown in studies again that people that are supplemented with these things or people that have good amounts in their diet have reduced risk of mental health conditions. And it's kind of things like including pumpkin seeds, flax seeds, nuts, and adding them into things and just making sure that you get some of these kinds of foods every day.
Mm, or the superfoods, as they became known as sometimes when you're having your pumpkin seeds as if you're being very fancy.
Oh, those other ones, the Estec seeds I used to pour over everything.
Oh, wow, that's really fancy.
I know, they were expensive too, and I don't know whether they were did any more good for me than any other seeds. But.
Happy after your bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
Okay, and the third one then?
The third thing I picked out was just kind of a novel study that I had read, that chili seeds and chilies, that in specific studies on patients with Alzheimer's, that if they have these included in their diet, that it can improve their memory. So it's only one study and it probably could do with being replicated, but it's just sort of to have something like if you like chili or you like spicy foods, you know, that
absolutely
to include them.
Can't do any harm.
And they'll add a bit of flavour and they'll spice up your vegetables.
And spice up your life. So you're saying that there's the link with Alzheimer's disease. Bit of Spice Girls next there, please, Dan.
Oh, exactly.
That's really interesting though, because I think obviously the more links that we can find, and as you say, these studies need to be replicated, but at the same time, it's so hopeful to actually think that there's simple, you know, you said chili seeds, like, you know, who would think of that, you know? So I think it's really interesting that we're finding maybe the studies, even though there's not as many of them, that they're actually proving some benefit to our health.
Yeah, and the study will conclude that it would have a favourable effect. So it's not saying that you should definitely do it, but it's saying, you know, if you're eating it as part of a balanced diet.
And tell me just before you go on to the other ones here, are you finding younger people are really conscious about a healthy diet, or is it quick brick and ping food and kind of processed food? Are people taking diet seriously, in your opinion, or not seriously enough? Are they looking after their
after
mental
them.
Health with food, or do they just look at a couple of years, I have a bit of broccoli once a week, that'll do, you know? Are they looking at it seriously?
I suppose it depends on who you're looking at. Like, for example, I work with some sports teams doing
Hurling,
and I work with groups of eating disorders here in the hospital, and depending on your patient or depending who you're talking to, they'll have an interest in nutrition or not. I find that a lot of young people now are very interested, and when you give them information, yeah, you know, they soak it
up. That's the key, when you give them information, because I know the sports teams don't have all this information.
It's just you.
And like my day, when I was told one time that I should have potatoes or something and fish, so I went and had fish and chips. I didn't get the deep fat frying pan.
Close enough.
But, you know, but people have got information, so there's heaps of information out there for people that just want to make their diet better for mental health, obviously.
Yeah, there's